Welcome, all of you. Thanks so much for coming, especially if this is your first time at All Souls. You are very welcome, and I hope you feel very welcome as you're here. It's great to see you. The furthest somebody's come for this for this afternoon is Chicago. I don't know if anybody can beat that. No? Great. Sarah, you win the prize. So there you go. Well done. It's great to see you. Well, as we look at this passage, the question is, what has uncleanness got to do with us? I mean, this word unclean, it was here seven times in that passage. I don't know if you noticed it, but of course we don't use the word unclean very much these days. So what's it got to do with us? Well, I've got three headings to help us sort this out. First of all, we're going to look at what has uncleanness got to do with us. And then secondly, we're going to look at why these feelings are so persistent. And then lastly, what can be done about it? So firstly then, what has uncleanness got to do with us? Let me ask you a question. Can you remember the most important job interview you ever had? I guess all job interviews are pretty important in this current climate. Can you remember, though, the most important one? Can you remember what it was like to get ready for it? How you prepared? Maybe you prepared things to say, but also you made sure you were presentable. The things you were wearing, you probably scrubbed up for it, probably took some time doing that. Or maybe this is a better thing to ask. Can you remember your first date? Can you remember your first date? Remember what that was like? Can you remember what it felt like to get scrubbed up for it, to get your hair just right, to make sure you were smelling particularly fragrant, the clothes were just right, because the person was so important, so you did that. Now, I seem to dimly remember the first time that I my first date, and I seem to remember I emptied an entire bottle of my dad's Old Spice aftershave all over me, which, as you know, is absolutely irresistible to anybody within a 30-foot radius. I mean, including household pets like cats and dogs, if I remember correctly. But there you go. Why do we go through all of these rituals in order to be ready when we meet somebody important? Why do we do it? Why is it so important to us? I guess it's a no-brainer, really. If we don't do it, if we're covered in filth, if we stink terribly, and if our clothes are in rags, well, the meeting's going to be over before it's begun. It really matters for us to be clean because we want to make sure that we'll be accepted. It's something we do all the time, if you think about it. Well, if that's what it takes to prepare yourself for a first date or a crucial interview, what will it take to prepare yourself to meet Almighty God, who, as we know, sees beyond the nice clothes, sees beyond the good manners and the aftershave, who sees deep into our moral and spiritual character? Even if we're not religious at all, don't we often have nagging feelings of guilt or shame or unworthiness? We spend millions each year on therapy, don't we? Just trying to deal with those two things, guilt and shame. Guilt and shame, that's what it's all about. The fear that we're going to be exposed, the fear that we're going to be found out. And I want to suggest this afternoon that we feel this uncleanness because we know we haven't even lived up to our own standards, let alone the standards of God, the moral cleanness of God. So here's the question for us. If God is perfectly pure and perfectly holy and we are not, then how can we possibly be in his presence? How can we be clean enough, if I can put it that way? Well, that is exactly why the religious leaders here in verse 1 are doing so much washing. If you've got a hold of one of those sheets, do take a look at it. It'll be great as we go through. These religious leaders are scrubbing up for the most important meeting of their lives, a meeting with God. Can you see verse 3? What they did was they refused to eat anything unless they'd given their hands a ceremonial washing. Hopefully you all did that before you got tucked into the food here. And then verse 4, they had, quote, many other traditions, such as the washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles, all designed to make themselves fit to enter God's presence. That's why they did it. Cleanness and uncleanness is a theme that runs all the way through literature, as you probably know. Shakespeare's play Macbeth is a terrific example of this. You remember the story? Lady Macbeth wants her husband to take to the throne. She wants him to be king. So they plot together in order to kill the existing king. They murder him. And then there's this scene after they kill King Duncan where Lady Macbeth is sleepwalking. Do you remember this scene? And as she sleepwalks, she's rubbing her hands together like this, backwards and forwards. She's desperately trying to get the spots off her hands because she sees spots of blood on her hands and she cannot get rid of them. She just can't get them off. And the reason for that is, of course, it's not real blood on her hands. It's a projection of her guilt, her moral uncleanness, having killed the king. That's why she can't get it off. Blood you can deal with. You can get that off with soap and water. That's easy. But not guilt. It's deep. It's seemingly unreachable by human hand. And she knows that nothing she can do will get rid of it. Now, of course, not many of us will have actually committed murder, but we still face the same problem. If God is perfectly pure and perfectly holy, and we are not, how can we ever hope to be in his presence? The religious leaders, just like Lady Macbeth, have been washing their hands compulsively over and over again. And that brings us to our second heading. Why are these feelings of uncleanness so persistent? Why won't they go away? Well, certainly not for lack of trying. If you think about it, there are basically two ways to get clean. There are basically two ways, and which one we choose will depend on whether we're religious or not. If we're not religious, we'll probably assume that the feelings of uncleanness and guilt will go away when we change our actions, change our circumstances, or maybe change the way that we think about things. Just to give one example, a lot of people think that nagging feelings of uncleanness are basically a delusion. They're basically a throwback to the way that we were brought up by our parents. Or maybe they're a throwback to our religious heritage, and it's the religion which is making us feel guilty, because, of course, that's what religion is. It's designed to make you feel guilty so that you can be manipulated. So here's the solution. What you do is you get rid of religion, and then you stop feeling guilty and unclean. That's the way you do it. That's one way of getting clean. But if we are religious, on the other hand, we'll try to get clean by doing something else. We'll do something like these religious leaders are doing. Maybe we'll be baptized. Maybe we'll pray and we'll read the Bible every day. Maybe we'll go to church every week. We'll take communion. Maybe, just maybe, we'll even avoid certain sorts of people and certain sorts of places, because we think that that will keep us from uncleanness. Just like the latent Orient football player this past couple of weeks who turned down the chance of a free trip to Las Vegas. I don't know if you heard this. They'd done very well in the FA Cup, and their chairman said, "I'll fly you all to Las Vegas for a free trip on my private jet." And this player said this. This was the quote in the newspaper. "I prefer not to go. Las Vegas is a city full of sins, and I am a very religious person." So you see the reasoning there. Las Vegas is an unclean place, and if I go there, well, then I'll become contaminated. So what I need to do is not go there, and then I'll be clean. Now, according to Jesus, the problem with both of these ways of getting clean, both non-religious and religious, is the same. The problem is they only work on the outside. The externals, the surface, the appearance. They only deal with the symptoms rather than the disease itself. But Jesus says our uncleanness is internal. It's out of reach. It's beyond self-help, beyond reform, beyond therapy, and beyond religion. Just look at what Jesus says in verse 14. Verse 14. "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a man can make him unclean by going into him. Rather, it is what comes out of man that makes him unclean." And then Jesus has to repeat himself because the religious people he's talking to just don't get it. Verse 18, "Are you so dull?" he asked. "Don't you see that nothing that enters a man from the outside can make him unclean? For it doesn't go into his heart, but into his stomach, and then out of his body." So some fairly graphic human biology there, but you see what Jesus is saying. He's saying regardless of what foods you eat, what foods you avoid, or how clean your hands are when you eat, your heart is already unclean. You may have been baptized. You may go to church every week. You may pray and read your Bible every single day, But none of that will change the fact that your heart is unclean. All the self-help, all the reform, all the therapy, all the religious rules and regulations, they all miss the fact that the problem of uncleanness is not external. It's internal, and it's out of our reach. Just in case we've missed it, Jesus says it another way in verse 20. Look at that. What comes out of a man is what makes him unclean. For from within, out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and make a man unclean. So if your heart has ever produced any of the things on that list, then according to Jesus, you are already unclean. And so am I. And like Lady Macbeth, even with compulsive washing, we are incapable of making ourselves clean. Do you hear? Do you hear how radical this is? It's extraordinary. See, I don't know what you were expecting as you came here today. Maybe you were expecting a very religious person dressed in a very religious way telling you how wonderful religion is. Maybe that's what you were expecting. But this is the complete opposite of that. This is the complete opposite of what religion says. Religion says, deal with the externals. If you don't do this, but do that. If you wash in a certain way, if you dress in a certain way, if you avoid eating certain things, if you follow certain rules and regulations, then you'll be clean. Then you'll be fit to face God. But Jesus is saying, no, no. Do you understand? Nothing you do can make you clean because the problem is not outside you. It's inside you somewhere you can't reach. Your heart is constantly producing uncleanness. It's a fountain of uncleanness, regardless of what rules and traditions you follow, religious or unreligious. Now, at this point, you may say, well, Barry, you know, look, I know my heart isn't perfect, but it's not that bad. It's not that bad. So, for example, when I see a homeless person on the street out there on Regent Street, you know, I'll stop and give money. I'm not a bad person. And it's true, it's a very good thing to care for the poor, no doubt about that. It's a wonderful thing to care for the poor. But let's ask ourselves, why do we do it? Why do we give? What are the motives going on in our hearts when we see that person there in the street and cowering by a shop? What do we think? Is it possible that we give because our consciences just give us such a hard time and we feel so guilty that we just want to give money so that we won't feel guilty anymore? Is that possible? If it is, well, friends, is that not an unclean motive for giving? Are we giving to make ourselves feel better or to make them feel better? What about if I'm walking down Regent Street and I have somebody with me, I don't know them particularly well, and we both of us, out of the corner of our eye, we see that person on the street there. And for a minute, we both feel slightly awkward. We both know what the other one's thinking. We're thinking, oh dear, what do we do? Because if I don't give money, I look like I'm not generous. I'm going to look like I'm a skinflint. I'm going to look like I'm not a godly person. So what do I do? I tell you what, I'll give some money. There we are. Good luck to you. I hope that's helpful. And that way, the person has the right impression of me. Well, what's the motive of the heart there? Is it really for them? Or is it for me? And sometimes, let's be honest, we see that person and we just give money because, hey, it feels really good, doesn't it, to give money sometimes? It feels good because we feel good. It makes us feel like we're good, upstanding members of society. It does feel good if we're honest. But again, why am I giving? Is it for them or is it for me? Do you see how impossible it is to avoid the uncleanness of the human heart? And just to say, this is not just a Christian idea. Gandhi, Buddha, even the atheistic philosopher Nietzsche says exactly the same thing. Even if we are doing apparently good things, it's for unclean reasons. That's why our feelings of uncleanness persist. Gandhi actually wrote this in his autobiography. Let me just read this. It's extraordinary. Where is there a wretch so wicked and loathsome as I? This is Gandhi speaking, the most religious man who ever lived, I guess, in lots of ways. I've forsaken my maker, so faithless have I been, for it is an unbroken torture to me that I am still so far from him, who, as I fully know, governs every breath of my life and whose offspring I am. Here's the key part. I know that it is the evil passions within that keep me so far from him, and yet I cannot get away from them. Why? Why can't Gandhi get away from them? Why can't we get away from them? Because we carry this unclean heart inside us wherever we go and whatever we do. And even though we carry it everywhere, it's beyond our reach. There's nothing we can do to make it clean. You know, it's interesting, in that scene with Lady Macbeth sleepwalking, there's a doctor who's just hiding in the corner watching her as she sleepwalks, and he says the most amazing thing. He says this: more needs she the divine than the physician. In other words, she needs more than a doctor. She needs God. And that brings me to Jesus himself, because Jesus is both. He actually describes himself as a doctor in Mark chapter 2, but also, again and again, he reveals himself to be divine, as God come to earth. And that means, of course, not only can he diagnose our heart issue, but he can also do something about it. And so to our final heading, what can be done about uncleanness? Would you just look at verse 24 with me? Jesus leaves the Jewish area he was in, and he deliberately goes to the vicinity of Tyre, which was a Gentile city. It was a non-Jewish city. He meets a woman, verse 26, who we're told is Greek, born in Syrophoenicia. Now, that seems like an odd detail to include, doesn't it? Until you realize one thing. As far as Jewish culture was concerned, this woman was unclean. She was a Gentile. She mustn't be associated with, or you'd become unclean. And yet Jesus, humanly speaking, a Jewish man, deliberately makes an arduous journey about 30 miles into a place that would have been thought of as unclean. And then he not only talks with this unclean woman, he heals her unclean daughter, who we read has an evil spirit inside her. The original Greek actually says she has an unclean spirit. You see the significance of that. Religious solutions only deal with the outside. Non-religious solutions only deal with the outside. But here, by healing this girl, Jesus demonstrates he has the power to clean us on the inside. And notice the way he does it. The only way Jesus can do it is by becoming ritually unclean himself, by going into unclean territory and identifying with unclean people. In other words, he must sacrifice himself so that they can be made clean. And although Jesus makes a long and difficult journey to heal this little girl, do you know how far he went to save you and me? He went to the cross. Jesus knows that all of us, with all of our moral and spiritual uncleanness, must one day face the judgment of a perfectly pure, perfectly holy God. So at the cross, Jesus did it for us. He sacrificed himself. He became unclean by taking on our uncleanness. He faced a perfectly holy God on our behalf, and he bore the consequences. That's why he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He was experiencing on our behalf exactly what we will experience if we will not accept the cleansing he offers. He was taking our uncleanness upon himself, taking the consequences so that we don't have to. Do you see? Do you see how loving that is? And the joy, of course, of Jesus' resurrection from death 3 days later is that it proves, once and for all, our uncleanness has been dealt with. It proves God has accepted Jesus' sacrifice on our behalf. If we put our trust in Jesus, therefore, God will never again see our hearts as unclean. Why? Because Jesus has taken our place and we take his. God will always see us in the same way as he sees his Son, perfectly pure and perfectly holy. Friends, if we want that for ourselves, we can do no better than simply do what this woman does. Look at verse 25. She falls at Jesus' feet, so there's a gesture there of submission. And verse 28, she recognizes him as Lord. In other words, Jesus, you call the shots. You call the shots in my life. And it's the only time, by the way, in Mark's gospel that someone addresses Jesus in that way. It's the only time. Now, as we finish, I'm guessing all of us will be in one of two camps. Some of us will agree with Jesus' diagnosis of the human heart, and others of us will respectfully disagree. Either way, can I say, the cross speaks directly to you. To those who look into their hearts and say, you know what, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but on the whole, I think I'm a basically good person. To you, the cross says this. If the state of your heart is not that serious, why did Jesus have to die to make it clean? Just before his death, Jesus explicitly prayed that there might be another way of dealing with it. But there was no other way. He went to the cross. He died. And that is how serious our uncleanness is. My friend, will you let Jesus take your uncleanness? Will you let him take it so that you can become clean? But the cross speaks differently to those who do see their uncleanness. To you, the cross says this. It's true. You are unclean. You are. Because that is what it costs to put it right. But see how much you are loved anyway. Christ actually gave up his life for you, for people who know their hearts are beyond self-help, beyond reform, beyond therapy, beyond religion. Put your trust in him and be cleaned. The cross says, see how he died. You're more unclean than you ever realized, but more loved than you ever dreamed. Thank you for listening.